that have shown interest with your nominations that we've received. We are going to do an interview for a period of 45 minutes. So all the members that are here will be asking questions. It's Honorable Kekana there, Honorable Zedi, Honorable Zotesi, Honorable Madisha, Honorable Davis, there will be Honorable Ndozi, and Muloi Moropa myself. We will take you through the questions and all the members will be asking. So within your 45 minutes, make sure that you allow members to all have questions posed to you. We are going to be appointing for three posts. The posts that we are applying for, two of them will have a full period, and one is a filling up of a period. At the end of the interviews and after we've done appointments, we're going to sit and determine as a subcommittee member which ones we allocate as full and which ones, so that you don't get surprised after it. Welcome again. Feel free and relaxed to take us through all the questions that you will be posing to you. What would that be the very first question we would need to still know about yourself in detail? If it was the same panel as last, we would skip that question. But you know, there's other members who are not there to hear about yourself. We need to know, to understand your introduction to introduce yourself to us, your related to qualifications, your expertise as well that you're bringing on board, with your qualifications and the experience that you have acquired. Over to you, Palisa.
Thank you, Chairperson, and also thank you to the committee for the opportunity. My name is Palisa Kadi. I would like to tell the committee more about my experience in terms of media in particular. My interest lies, it's been almost 15 years now of engagement in the media sector, professionally and academically. I hold an honors degree in political science and a master's degree in visual history, which includes production and development of media material. But also my interest was enhanced through media activism through the South African Students' Press Union. I have been trained by your Knights of Media Works, your Sangoko, and also the Freedom of Expression Institute. So these are the organizations that roomed us towards understanding constitutionalism and what the right to freedom of expression means for the new South Africa. So I was heavily involved during that time, also writing and also formulating ideas in the Discord as well. I think my other issue is that I learned more about governance of structures during that time through my students and leadership positions that I held. Professionally, I work in the media community, a content classification authority, which forms part of this committee, reporting to this committee. I also possess skills for monitoring and evaluation, which is a very scarce skill in terms of development and understanding governance, impact, and its implications in our institutions, especially the public enterprises and also state-owned institutions. For me, if it were not being a true South African, in the next years to come, I would go to the UN and consult or World Bank. That's the level of skill that I possess in terms of governance, in terms of leadership, in terms of training in the structure. So my training has been UN-based. It's recognized by the World Bank as well through the VET School of Governance. I've also explored different models of assessing governance in institutions through modeling, through scenario planning, which also I did at the Oxford University in the UK. So I have been quite fortunate as a young South African to receive various means of training and also opportunities due also to my openness and also the availability of those opportunities to young people in South Africa.
Thank you.
Would you like then, after all the background you've given us, just zoom into the Media and Diversity, Media Development and Diversity Act, to just tell us about it, its strengths and weaknesses, quite briefly.
It reflects more on South Africa's ability to give liberties to South Africans. This, I mean, that the freedom of expression is one of the freedoms that South Africans never had. And that coming through the media, it's endorsed by law. It meant that the act is that South Africa is legally ready and also in the policy framework that is included. Also, the act says that media diversity access to media by all people of South Africa is critical, which means that the South Africans living in the Northern Cape, close to the borders of Namibia, and many others who are unable to receive access to technology are also sort of in the processes of policymaking. But the act also refers to training, because the state cannot endorse and make policies without supporting and establishing institutional structures to support that. It reflects more on terms of training. It also refers to the capacity of the institution itself and those that will be funded. Those are its strengths. But also through my academic know-how and explorations, we find that the act is centered on the online, and online is the future. Its engagement or integration of online media is because of the years as well, in terms of its establishment and enactment. But what South Africa needs, insofar as media and its development now, it's also acknowledging that we are developing a digital citizen. Digital citizenry means that there is no future without online engagement, and that includes building and investing in infrastructure, the capacity of its people to deal with that, but also creating valid research to support that, because there's no business case. We need a business case to ensure that it happens. I think professionally I've explored that from where I come from in terms of the online, its implications and how the world operates currently. There's an online regulation policy scenario that is currently happening within the communication sector, but the act is silent in that. But also it need not prescribe in terms of how what sustainability means, therefore at an operational level or other levels of managing the institution. The institution will have to look at that. It has to look at where this fund is directed and how it translates into meaningful media diversity for South Africans. So I've just pinpointed the online element in terms of its weaknesses and the legalities of appointments and the terms. Some of them also tend to work against governance in terms of the terms and how long the committee may and where committees are set. I'm sure that's coming with the review as well, the amendments.
Thank you very much. Honorable Kekan.
Good evening, Mekadi.
Mekadi.
Tell me, what can you do to ensure that media diversity is safeguarded and nurtured? And what different strategy can you deploy to make sure that the MDDA is to strategies that you can deploy in the MDDA to make sure that both are winning, meaning I'm talking about safeguarding and measuring. Thanks.
I think as a thank you member, as a person alone, it will require a lot of effort insofar as a contribution from members, the board itself, and support from the committee. Diversity, I think the state that we have observed in the past 15 to 20 years is commitment to make sure that there is diversity, including transformation in the media. I think I'll touch also on the case of 2000. My thesis was on racism in the media, the Mail and Guardian case. That's what I published. It was such a touching exploration where you could see that what the new democracy of South Africa is running, but the way issues that came in terms of code of conduct within the press, which is very critical in terms of how governance within media is, but also public participation is very important. Having been a young person living in the townships, the opening and closing of community radio stations has been what we've observed in the past 15 years. And it's been difficult because more euphoria has been there in terms of people knowing that they have a voice. With diversity and transformation in media and through the MTDA, what one has observed is that people believed that they had a voice, and it was through community media because there is not much censorship. There are no limitations. So the openness and access, meaning that all South Africans will be able to have access to all media platforms. Another issue was the infrastructure element that is there, and the licensing issue, which later on was taken off in terms of the Electronic Communications Act, an incentive for the industry, the communication industry, but also not so much of an incentive in terms of the FDDA, as they were benefiting from those annual licenses from community media. Now, the measuring aspect, I've been thinking a lot in terms of what we don't get to know about, especially at community level, is that people have a voice, and that voice translates into electronic and into print. People are given opportunities to explore, be it their skills and unskilled, hence the relevance of MTDA, because they are able to pick up in terms of training, they are able to enhance and nurture the skills of people who show potential at that level. And ownership, it's very important. Issues of ownership and control in the media, especially the private, the elements of private, it's a very sensitive issue for South Africa. The issues of objectivity as well, and people having their voices registered in the manner that they wish and want to. Now you'll find, I think, an example that many of our graduates, I'm going to start at that level because the state needs for their education as well, that they are taken through the community media training. They will go to a community media and other print and start writing. When they are ready and groomed, ETV comes in and takes them for another internship, so that SAPC. Now they are fully fledged and they live with that skill. And so it's a vicious cycle for our community media, because they will keep on receiving these people at entry point, and there is no incentive for them, be it through a training grant. I've looked at the MTDA, and I've looked at the MTDA operations, be it a training grant, such that they are able to sustain them longer. But also, what we miss for sure is the economic voice. Now, with the ability of community media to take in people and whom we see as professionals in the media sector, they become DJs, they become all sorts of producers and so on, because that is their entry point. And when we do this research and when we continue creating a business case for funding, we are unable to say that this is a value chain, members. We can't pinpoint the contribution of community media in the overall media development. Yes, that is the initiation phase, that is the pioneering level. So these are some of the elements to build a case, maybe for National Treasury and all other points where there's disbursement of funds that we need to build this, we need to have that economic voice, because most of these institutions, especially your commercial ones, are able to continue through the use and the intake from community media.
Thank you very much. Honorable Sadi.
Good day, Lisa. Come here. Bye.
Good day. I'm okay. Thank you.
Okay. Print and electronic media. What are the distinctions between the two? And do they serve the same purpose in the society? In your understanding.
Thank you, Honorable Eddie. This is a very sensitive mess. I'm going to put two pointers to the members, the digital migration and the online distribution platform. Print refers to your newspapers, community newspapers, which are costly in terms of production. Because news must be gathered from the ground, grassroots level. There should be big machines to print the 10-page community newspaper. Electronic is your sound, which refers also to radio, but also now I'm pursuing the online measure, which I'll talk about later when I get an opportunity. You find that print also in our communities, the census report just in 2011 reflects that the level of numeracy and literacy in South Africa is still low. Meaning that who are we developing this print material for? Are we able to attract, are we able to deal with that societal ill as well? Can we create programs that promote literacy as well? It is very low. But also with electronic, which is the most traditional and measurable measure tool of communicating. But the issue becomes licensing, the issue becomes broadband and your what do you call this, the CASA polls, yes. But those are some of the issues in our communities, especially in the outskirts. But if we find that we need a balance in terms of how we use this. Remember, studios are created maybe in a garage, maybe in a community hall, in a community and multi-purpose center. When these are created, why would we not be able to enhance that with a proper studio, a studio for recording as well, so that these news are created and they can be dispersed immediately and can run concurrently and even be feeder to your SABCs and other media houses and broadcasting media. So for me and my understanding is that we've always relied on electronic, we've always relied on print, yet there are still disadvantages in terms of access, but also the language issue is, are we able to diversify such that we are able to speak to the immediate community? But what about the community in the next region? How do we classify and categorize our impact? The digital migration story might lead us into more access. Accessibility for me has always been an issue. I've lived in the rural areas and could not get online frequency or frequency. So you can imagine having a box of a radio component, but you're unable to receive frequency. Now, your digital migration poses as an opportunity in terms of expanded frequencies. But is the NDDA ready? Are all the other avenues ready to support that? Because it will mean that the council will have to license more radio stations, and also NDDA in a way will have to train and develop and put in infrastructure to all these newly acquired entities or community structures. So there will need to be, but there is an economic measure that needs to be directed to that. Print is very expensive. It is, especially for the community in our Afghans. But print also can pose as an educational tool in terms of supporting the very low levels of literacy in our communities. Therefore, production and development of content will become critical.
Hey. Honorable Davis?
Thank you very much. I've got two questions. The first one is, in what instances do you think press freedom should be limited to ever? And the second question is, what mechanisms do you believe should be used to hold the media to account for its reporting?
Okay. Thank you, Honorable Davis. I think the Constitution refers to freedom of expression, and all freedom and liberties come with responsibility. And having an open-ended setup where rights are abused. Maybe I might have read a lot about censorship because of my background, but also I might have seen a lot of impact in terms of under-reporting, a lack of objectivity. There's a current trend, I must say, it has not normalized yet, members, in so far as media and objectivity. But SANEF is trying its best to work with the public in that. The Press Council as well, I think that's an institution that holds and understands both the constitutional element and what should be there, but it's not being implemented yet, the charter. For us to move forward in so far as press freedom with limitations, remember, South Africa is a values-loaded society. Whose values are we supporting and are we supporting? From which background? Hence the issue of race is back in the cards. It is becoming a shameful measure 20 years later because we are unable to balance such issues and also the reporting. I think for the past 3 weeks we've had a lot of reporting on race and other things that were published as well. But just going back to the issue of freedom of expression and press freedom, there should not be abuse where we are unable to pinpoint it because ownership and also in control is not within all South Africans. All I'm saying is that once we speak about lack of objectivity, we begin to ask who owns it, and then it becomes a personal question. And from a discourse level, it should not be about that. From a governance level, because the Press Council, being a credible institution, should be able to move forward. But the implementation levels are still very low in terms of us being to be able to say the objectivity. I'm going to make one example. when the community burnt down the library in an RDP or really emerging townships in the suburban areas, you find that there's a lot of noise about the senselessness of that. But for me, understanding community development, there's no one who will walk out and go and bend down a library, be it it's informed by fury, and it says it's lack of service delivery. That we know that there's lack of services in our communities. But if there's lack of services, because this is a newly established township, why would the same man or woman is going to burn that library down, not burn their own house, because it's a state house as well? That's fairness. And also in recognizing community factions, and in recognizing that our communities, they are imbalanced, there's an imbalance, because the same reporter would take that feature, and that feature you would see on the online, and South Africans become selfish people in that manner. We are not saying we should harness and cover up for irrational acts by the public, but fairness in reporting is required. There's just too many stories that tend to come to mind, because with people having received, and it's not acknowledged that these people are staying in a suburban establishment built by the government for them, but all that is said, they are burning down the library. So for me, that is the most hurtful experience, shameful experience, that we begin to see, and it's becoming normal. Normal, they're burning down schools, people are burning down schools, yet they live in state houses. Why can't I burn my own house down? What does that say about dysfunctionality, the indifferences that are there, but also how we want to understand and interpret community dynamics, so that people are able to understand that, maybe, I'm not saying our public is naive, but people are able to understand that the house they are staying in is a state-funded subsidized house, which is the same as the library that is being bent down. Now, with community, with the press itself, you find that there's a lack of acknowledgement in that. There's a lack of scrutinizing the cases in point. It just becomes an excitement, a euphoria that, look, people are able to turn against the state. I think I'm quite a very open and understand where my freedoms lie, but rationality is very important. Now, with the best freedom, we are expecting these people to be professionals. The same is in anthropology. Why would you get someone from who is not staying in that community going to write about that community? And you'll find that they spend more time, first of all, assessing and understanding that community so that they'll be able to write about them. So it's, I think for me, it's the same. I've been exploring all these elements, and I would sit sometimes and refuse to watch news because of some of the irrational and not so objective reporting that is being. But we need to show these things to amongst ourselves, to South Africans, but to the world, with fairness. With fairness.
Okay, can I just mention that there are still many more other questions, about three of them, so that at least all the questions are posed. Okay, Honorable Madisha?
Yes, thanks. One, having understood, you know, everything that you've raised, one would just want to check your capacity to solve as administration is concerned. We here are talking about the board, and what one would want to check is, given the fact that we're talking here about finances, we're talking about the policies which have been evolved by Parliament, etc., do you have the capacity to ensure
ensure that these are actually protected, and the policies, the finances of the people, finances of the state, etc., will be able to do that, particularly with members of the board who are there, who may not be all, as we know, honest. Thank you.
Thank you. Honorable Minister, I think the board's role is for oversight and providing leadership and also finding each other within that framework. And in board leadership, there should be all expertise. I'm just going to reflect my own expertise as well. My expertise are in governance, corporate governance. It's in financial management. It's in grant funding. It's in scenario planning, meaning strategy development. I think I've done this and have managed to gain experience and leverage in terms of seeing where one wanted to be, and also applying cost saving measures, which Treasury alludes to. Now, to guard that, we need integrated reporting. This is what corporate governance is about, and this professionally, this is what I'm doing at a professional level almost daily, making sure that policies are in place, especially those that reflect on good governance and daily operations. The audits are responsible for audits professionally, internal audit, which is one of the critical elements of corporate governance and risk management. It's very good that you are able to identify the risk. For instance, for me, the highest risk with MDDA is low budget allocation, and it's high levels of expectation based on its mandate. The mandate and performance, if you were to look and balance and just do one assessment, to look into the assessment of the allocation itself versus the performance of the organization, you'll see that there are gaps there. If either the allocation, yes, definitely it's not sufficient, but levels of efficiency as well in the organization. One thing that I've observed in the past that consultants have been used in the institution to do research, but we have more than five institutions in Gauteng alone of higher learning where we could explore, where we could fund projects and get the same, which will be more credible because it will be associated with the minister. It means that the institution has, and your findings also, there's been a weight against normal research ethics. So there are elements.
I just wanted to remain with 5 minutes and okay. Still have two questions to answer.
Okay. Yeah, I think I understood and then. Thank you very much. Yeah.
Can I proceed to Honorable Dr. Tetsi?
Thank you, Chairperson. Good afternoon, Osprey. Yeah, I'm listening now to your sentiments regarding people who go to communities whereby they're not residents. They often write about the life of the community. Mm-hmm. Are you implying that people are, you know, not for development, but to make money? And would you be satisfied with the situation whereby someone goes to this particular community, get the information, write a book or an article, and go back to plan strategies to assist the particular community, or just a person to go there and come back without doing anything back to that particular community after gathering information? What would be the best, in your opinion, for us to, you know, to see progress, especially your thesis on racism in the media. Now you talk about the communities, but trying to relate the two, that would be the best one for someone to go there, get information, come back and assist in addressing, you know, the plight of the community, or just buy it and go back with money, share the book or the newspaper.
Okay. I think journalists and also researchers, your anthropologists, when you go to communities, there is no expectation. In fact, it seems unethical to pay people to give you information if you know it happens. But also for research purposes, yes, it's also much needed.
all I was trying to put emphasis on is that people need to understand our communities, not from the point of view of their own backgrounds, and make judgments, which for me is what is happening. Also, community beneficiation. Now, we will find that a Times Media journalist will go to the community and probe and write an article. But also, when it's time for the production of that article, yes, there will be eyes rolling and people not knowing that this is happening, especially issues of rape and other elements of abuse. But why would Times Media not, together with MGTA, support community media? It's been a while. They used to support the South African Students Press Council, where I come from. They used to do initiatives of training, but it has not been happening. That's all. There are exchange programs and other efforts that can be put in so that we're able to have social cohesion that is well meant.
Okay. Can I say in your remaining 2 minutes, how would you describe the community media environment in South Africa currently? What are the strengths? What are the weaknesses?
Oh, okay. I think when exploring the question, we should look at the levels of literacy and the levels of numeracy and how people are able to engage. All these riots and ongoing confrontations because people think they do not have a voice. Yet the state is investing in institutions like the MTDA, and also your ICASAs are also broadening frequencies so that they can have the voice. Now, where is the dilemma? The dilemma is that people are no longer talking. There is no social dialogue, which is what we should be starting at. The same social dialogue that has, the lack of social dialogue that has erupted in terms of our racism issues emerging upfront currently. So that, I think that is where we are. Our people, they do understand, the public understands community that they have rights, but they are, and there's a sense of entitlement. Therefore, constitutionalism needs to still to be worked on. Social cohesion and all elements of governance, because our communities, they've been governed before. It's not the first time that we have governance in such chance. We've had villages, we've had all forms of chiefdoms and kingdoms. So when we're reflecting on how ungovernable the system is and becomes, you wonder where is that gap? Yes.
Okay, Alisa Kari, I think we've reached the end of time that you're engaging you. Questions for this interview, and we want to really thank you for getting in detail, in depth, in answering the questions. We sincerely appreciate, as the subcommittee will then sit, do our own evaluation at the end of the interview, since there are many more people to be interviewed, including tomorrow, who will be proceeding. Did I indicate to you that there are three regions? Did I do that? It's three. Two of them will be a full period post, a full period appointment. One will be filling up at 10. We will sit down, determine, and then respond in terms of where you are located. We sincerely thank you very much and wish you all the best. Good luck. Thank you. Okay, a good afternoon to you there, all the way to Sibuk. Okay, good afternoon. Yes, we were also going to encourage you to be as relaxed as possible, because it's only an interview, this one, so that we can engage and get all the information that we'll be looking for from you. There are members that constitute part of the panel. You will see there is Honorable Kekane, Honorable Freddy, Honorable Sotesi, Honorable Madisha, and then there is Honorable Davis. I am Honorable Moloi Morupa. So we've got 45 minutes allocated for you to answer all the questions that members would be asking. We just need to also alert you again that it's important you do use your own space and your own time in terms of juggling your own time for the questions. Just make sure that at least you reach all the questions. Would appreciate that only 45 minutes lapses. The posts are for appointment now. Two are for a filled period, and one is a filling up of a period from the machine. So this panel will sit at the end and do that determination, so we just need to be aware. Okay, so now let's take you through the questions that we want you to respond. If you can start with a detailed introduction about yourself that relates to qualification, your experience, and the expertise in this field. Over to you, Mr. Spooker.
Thank you very much, Chair. My name is Olutu Spooker. Amongst others, I hold a national certificate in vegetable broadcasting, which I did at the Walter Sisulu University. And I also hold a master's in philosophy from the University of Cape Town. And one of the things that I think I bring with my expertise is that I'm currently heading the skill development unit of the Southern Disability Development Trust. And fundamentally, the view that the central mandate of the MDDA is to ensure that we capacitate, you know, stations and other media entities. And I'm of the view that acknowledging and appreciating the higher education and training space of the country and how we could utilize figures to beef up the capacity of these entities, I could be in a better position to ensure that when the MDDA might not have the sufficient funds to, for instance, ensure that we adequately train people that are running community stations and so on, we could link up with the sectors to ensure that we bridge that gap. I'm also heading the communications and service, the spokesperson for disabled persons of Africa. In this capacity, I go through many radio stations, in particular in communities with many disabled persons. I would speak, for instance, that in most areas in Limpopo, where the prevalence of disability is highest in the country, you get a sense that some of the areas that do not have county radio stations that would be able to speak to some of the issues facing the sector. So I'm of the view that getting into this entity would ensure that in some of those areas we could see how best we could beef up the access to media. I mean, persons that are blind, for instance, they do not have TV to access information. They can't access information through newspapers and other forms of contemporary media. So I'm of the view that getting into this entity should at least enable that those communities who do not have radio, computer stations, for instance, that they as well are able to have access to information. I am what they call a Mandela Washington Fellow, and last year I had the honor to be invited by President Obama to go to the U.S. to learn about what they call civic education in that part of the world, together with a group of other fellows in the country. And one of the things that we learned in that part of the world was how to utilize media for advocacy, for instance. And because I'm the spokesperson, for instance, at DPSA, what I learned there is that advocacy becomes an important pillar towards driving specific agendas. And I get a sense that one of the roles of the MGDA is to ensure that we advance advocacy for community radio stations, but most importantly, that we advocate for a discourse that is to speak to the importance of diversifying our media, but also ensuring that issues of ownership goes to the previously disadvantaged, previously marginalized, a lot of these issues. So, in a nutshell, Chair, that is all we spoke. Thanks.
Okay, thanks very much. Can you then briefly indicate to me your understanding of the Media Development and Diversity Act? The strengths and the weaknesses, quite briefly.
My understanding of the MDA Act and the MDA in general is that it's got an important responsibility in South Africa to ensure that we diversify the ownership, and most importantly, in my view, is the content of our media. More often than not, when we talk about, you know, media and any other aspects that require transformation in South Africa, we talk about ownership, control. But what about the content? And in my view, for instance, where I come from in the constituents that I could say I represent, which is disabled persons, I'm of the view that the majority of the content that goes out there, you know, is not speaking to our issues. I mean, you would never get a show, for instance, that talks to issues of climate change and that is friendly to a deaf person, for instance, on TV. Instead, we're always subjected to, the only time you get those, you know, words on the screen for the deaf is when those generations move on and all these other things that are playing. But on the substantive and quantitative part of things, we seem to be fairly marginalized. And I'm of the view that those are some of the weaknesses, in fact, not only the MDDA, but broadly with the media, and some of the things that we ought to accost at the MDDA so that we ensure that we maximize the availability and access to media of almost everybody, including persons with disabilities. I think that the strength of the MDDA, from a historic perspective, is very important because it strives to transform the media. We know, for instance, that across the globe, discourses are driven largely by the media, whether positive or negative discourses. So it's important that we, of course, the MDDA cannot determine the content of the, of you know, editorial and all of that, but I'm of the view that there ought to be a way in which we shape the discourse around the content that the media would have to, you know, give out to other persons. And one amongst other strengths is that the history of South African, you know, media person is such that most of them, your Edima Lucas and many of them, actually come from what we call community radio stations. So I'm of the view that because the MDDA strives to support this, in my view, it therefore strives to create further, you know, rate giants. But most importantly, we ought to then ensure that to provide the necessary capacity to the stations. And I think for me, those are some of the key things that come out of the Act. Thanks.
Thank you. Honorable Kekana.
Thank you, Chair. And I just put Aruna. I just want to ask one question with a follow-up one. And I just want to know that to ensure that media diversity is safeguarded and nurtured, what can you do? What will you do? And number two, what different strategies can you deploy in the MDDA to ensure both means nurturing and safeguarding? Thank you, sir.
Thanks. I'm of the fundamental view, first and foremost, that the budget of MDDA is not enough, considering the kind of work, the kind of funding it has to do. And when I looked at the advert, the first thing I saw is how do we creatively seek additional funding to assist the MDDA to pursue its mandate. And to me, the first point that came is that if, for instance, a radio station requires 3 million rands to run the station for a year, 1.5 million rands of that goes to issues of the, you know, the equipment and so on. There's a shortfall of another 1.5, which of course the MDA cannot, in its current form, you know, fund. I must therefore go out and creatively seek additional funding sources. I've earlier on spoken about how CETAs could assist, for instance, in the payment of stipends but most important in ensuring that we upskill our persons in the process of finding the competency station along the lines of the national qualification framework. And perhaps another thing that I did not mention is that I also serve in the South African Qualification Authority Board, and I'm of the view that that experience would have enabled me to go to communities, say, you are a parent that just loves radio. How do we then ensure that we nurture your love such that you get properly qualified in the space that you get into? So I think that with regards to creativity, I'm wanting to be creative with regards to accessing resources, but most importantly, ensuring that our people in these stations get into the national qualification framework, use articulation framework as they, and that they're able to get proper qualifications in the process. I think basically those are the things that I would look at.
Okay. Thank you, Honorable Tekani. Can we go to Honorable Sedi?
Good day, Mr. Cook. How are you? Fine. Print and electronic media, what distinctions do you see tended to? And the second part is, do you think they serve a different type in society?
Thanks, Honorable. The print media refers to what others call, you know, contemporary forms of media, i.e. your newspapers, you know, those kind of media platforms. Electronic would refer to, I mean, in the current generation, when people look at Twitter, they don't look at it only on the paper, on the basis of being a social network, but equally as a form of a media, accessing information and so on. So you'd get your Twitters, you'd get your website, and so in that space you get electronic media. I'm of the view that both of them serve the same purpose. However, because of the evolution of society, I mean, the recent study, for instance, is saying that close to 60% of South Africans are having smartphones. Therefore, there remains a fundamental, you know, drop, for instance, in the revenue of the print media because of these new kind of forms of media that are existing. But in my view, the purpose of both media is the same, you know, to ensure that people can access information, the kind of information that's given, etc.
Okay, I did not introduce you to Honorable Ndlozi as a break, the Honorable Ndlozi, and he will proceed with the question.
And hi to you, my chief. I have two questions. One is, has to do with literacy, both media literacy in general, but electronic literacy. How is it important in your view? In what ways is it important to the creation of equality among citizens in South Africa? And what do you think are the political problems MDDA can engage in realizing that? And then the last question has to do with, you had begun to get into it, but maybe you could do it much more systematically. Your critique of the community media environment in South Africa today. Where is it weak? Where is it strong? And where could it go? And what needs to happen for it to go there? Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Honorable Ndlozi. The world has evolved such that literacy is seen in a specific way, i.e. going to school and. But in the contemporary African philosophy and thinking, South Africa is, and the world is littered with literature that in fact suggests that those that are literate might not necessarily the cleverest of the bunch. I'm saying so because
the literacy levels of South Africa, at least in the continent, are not the highest. However, there is a sense that those that are perceived or are literate could always look back and provide, you know, the information to those that are seen as not literate. And in a nutshell, Honorable Rose, I am saying that central to the MDDA is to ensure that persons access kind of, you know, content that's up there. Unfortunately, most of the content is in English. I'm very happy, for instance, Honorable Rose, that yesterday Isolezo introduced a new Xhosa publication that has started, I think, in the Eastern Cape and is going to go all over the country. So my sense is that in order to bridge the literacy gap and the kind of information we have, it becomes important to ensure that we could get both from the radio station but also other forms of media to speak to be in Venet and you know. One of the things that I have not picked up in the literature of the MDDA and community radio stations in South Africa is any research that has been done 10 years after the establishment, for instance, of the MDDA, be it a 10-year review of the MDDA and its impact, be it a longitudinal study on the community radio stations that they have, either supported as the MDDA or those that have been there. But the sense that I'm getting is that there are high levels of unsustainability that, you know, our radio stations are faced with. They're not sustainable amongst others because there might be no sufficient capacity to market the radio stations or to run the business wing of the stations. But most importantly, I mean, we have recently, or in fact others argue that we are still currently in a recession, and for the first budget that anybody cuts is that of marketing. But most importantly, I mean, I know when the YFM started, I think it was up in the Valtech, we all listened to it. You know, it was fresh, it was unique, and because of that kind of a content, all of us were listening to it. So I'm saying that amongst other things is that colleagues in the space ought to be fresh, ought to be unique, and ought to speak to issues that are facing everybody and everybody will be interested in. I think that's my broad critique of the set.
Thank you. Let's proceed, Honorable David.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. My first question is about press freedom. In what instances do you think press freedom should be limited, if ever? And then I'd also like to know if you've ever been politically active. Was you currently politically active, and if so, what position do you hold in a political organization? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Davis. I was politically active when I was in the student movement between 1998 and 2003-2004. And most that I served the ANC in Centurion in 2006, 7, and 8. And both 2009, I've never held any political office. Issues of press freedom. My view is that press freedom is a constant. There has to, however, be an important balance between press freedom that strives to educate the nation and press freedom that strives to destroy the nation. And it's a very difficult balance. I think many of our colleagues in the press and the media have, in some or most instances, failed to adhere. And everybody has got right to access information. Everybody should access all kinds of information. I think that as long as the information is largely striving to build our society, the one that all of us aspire to live in, there is absolutely nothing to work on destroying press freedom. I actually support press freedom. please.
Thank you. Can we then proceed to Honorable Madisha first, then Honorable Dutis first?
Good afternoon. So thanks. I think I've understood well a number of points that you have raised, and I've gone through the CV. I've raised some of these areas. The management areas where you have been able to take part in. And what we're looking at, MDDA, I mean, it's a wider, you know, kind of the thing, the institution. What one therefore wishes to understand from you is whether you will be able to manage the structure itself, whether you'll be able to take forward the policies of government which are there, which include you know, managing the resources, etc., etc., which is a major problem that we are faced with. If you could just explain that, because like I'm saying, in the management positions that you have outlined here, one has not seen where you've been able to manage you know, very many people, particularly around this kind of area. Are you able to handle that? Thank you.
Thanks, sir. Between 2006 and 2009, I served in the National Youth Commission in the presidency. And there I headed the governance and administration cluster on behalf of the Youth Commission serving in government, cluster of directors general. One of my responsibilities was to ensure that at the time, we're looking at a public service that had, you know, fewer young people getting into a system, and if they're in the system, they are, you know, in the lowest of positions. Now, I had to be tasked with running a campaign. I mean, the National Youth Commission had offices all over the country. And of course, attached to that were resources to ensure that some of the things that we're agreed to are actually finding space in the MTF then, and including what today others call the APPs, you know, the annual performance plan and all of that, of directors general. So from that perspective, I could say that, for instance, I've been able to manage large and complex institutions and positions to be taken forward. The South African Qualifications Authority, since it existed, there's always a clean audit. I serve in the executive committee. I chair committees at SAQUA. I also, of course, serve in the board. Now, amongst the other responsibilities I have is to look at to what extent are we, you know, ensuring that how we govern the entity, but also how manage how we play our fiduciary responsibilities in the entity are done in accordance to both the laws and the principles that govern how we should, you know, utilize public money. So I got that part, you know, appreciation of some of the things that ought to be done at this level.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Honorable Sotesi?
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Mr. Can you please share with us your understanding of nonpartisan or objectivity in as far as personal consent and political affiliation?
Upon accepting a position of this nature, it suggests that one ought to be nonpartisan, suggests that one ought to appreciate the nuance in the kind of information that those in the media would want to project. It therefore says, if I hold any political views or any of the political views that I hold, I should not put them in the work that I do. If I hold any political views, I ought to differentiate between Oluduseguka in his, I'm not sure what they call the, you know, local groups of political stuff. And, you know, so if I were to be in that setting, the views that I hold should totally be different to those that I have as a board member of an entity that strives to, you know, ensure that there's broader diversity, there's non-partisanship, and none of my political affiliations, if any, are playing a role in the in my work. That's my purpose. And
okay. No, thank you very much. Is there any follow-up that member wants to ask? Honorable Ndlozi?
So, how long were you in America for?
The plane dropped us there and took us out again in about 2 months. So I was there for 2 months.
Yeah, I can see you no longer have further questions. Can I thank you for giving yourself all the time to respond to all the questions? They will assist us to do an assessment at the end of all the interviews. We appreciate all the interaction that took place, and we also wish you all the best for these interviews. Good luck and thank you very much. All the best. Okay, I remember this gives us a bit of tea break, which is being put outside there. We need to grab our tea. Let's give ourselves a time. We are much earlier. Around the prayer. Yeah, no time. Yeah, so let's grab coffee and make sure that it's 15 minutes to 4. Honorable Lord, please do let us sit here. Don't go out. Honestly. 15 minutes to 3, we should all be starting with the next one. The next candidate. Let's be flexible, accommodate one another. Don't worry, Honorable Mazisha. Can we then agree tomorrow we start at 8? Yeah. It will still finish the same time. Half past 8. Okay. So tomorrow we start at half past 8 so that we can still finish at that same time we've planned. Because then we're starting a much more earlier. We can just finish it at the planned time. Okay. Can we then proceed? Because once we lose more time, then that's where we're going to have a crisis. But initially, Honorable Madisha, that I was speaking with you to do a half past seven, our program was half past seven. The original. If we planned based on the original program, it was half past seven. Well, you're changing now, but actually that one was the original. So we're going to proceed, Honorable Madisha, half past seven. We can't be tempered because that was the original plan. But beyond that, we wanted to take an extra candidate. We cannot, you know, we have to accommodate Honorable Madish. The other candidate will take in the next day. Okay? All right. That's not how we work. Can we get the next
person to be ready. Honorable Minister, if you check to the CV of Vuyelwa Mndazane, we are ready. Where is this guy? You can come with her. Good afternoon, Mayor Vuyelwa Vivian Mndazana. You can just press down it. Yeah. Okay. And welcome. Yeah, I'm going to encourage you to be as brief as possible so that once you are able to get all the answers that you are looking for. And the first thing, just feel very comfortable and, you know, rest assured. We want your comfort in order to get the response. Won't do anything bad. And also, I just to explain to you that you've got 45 minutes for your interaction with us. So once you ask a question, leave space for also other questions and make sure that you spread your time evenly so that you can be able to ask all the questions you want to ask. And lastly, is that this interview is for the third post. Two full period, one filling up a resignation. So, we are going to try at the end how to handle those so that you're not surprised. Just to know that in advance. Before I start with the questions, I'll just introduce members. They know that you have Vuyelwa, you have Vivian, Mndazane. So I will also introduce them to you. Starting at the corner there, you see that right there? That is Honorable Keka. And then next to him is Honorable Teddy. And next to Honorable Zay is Honorable Dotezi. Next to Honorable Dotezi is Honorable Matisha. You see the yellow tie here next to me? That's Honorable Davis. Well, there's a changing of colors now. It's gone gold. There's a member at the back, just at the corner here, a member doesn't, just here. It's Honorable Ndlozi. Yes. So those are the members who will be interacting with you. So can we then start? What I just need to know for now is that if you can introduce yourself to us, when you do that introduction, you actually show us how does your introduction relate to your qualifications, your experience, and the expertise within this environment. Over to you.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Vuyelwa Mndazane, as mentioned. I'm the station manager of Otjie Community Radio. I'm the chairperson of the Eastern Cape Community Radio Forum. And I am also the deputy secretary of the National Community Radio Forum. I studied at the University of Fort Hare and obtained a Bachelor of Arts in Communication degree, and I further did a postgraduate diploma in telecommunications, and I further did professional diploma in radio production with NEMISA. I worked I started working with IDASA, which was based here in Cape Town, whilst I was a student at NMESA. And then I went back home because I made a promise to the then DG of communication at the space. I gained from the learnership that I got to study in NMESA. I would go back and plow my skills back at home. And I managed to do that because today I'm the station manager of Forte Community Radio in Alice.
Thank you, Vielo. Quite briefly again, what you're still there. And can you tell us what you understand about the Media Development and Diversity Act? And maybe what are the weaknesses, what are the strengths?
My understanding about the Media Development Act is that it's up to the establishment of Media Development and Diversity Agency, how it was established, and it gives the MDDA mandate to work, to do better its job. If I may mention some of the mandate and the objectives of MDDA, according to the MDDA Act, is that MDDA should be responsible in making sure that the citizens have access to information, in particular marginalized communities. They also encourage media literacy and the development of its communities. The Act talks about the legislative systems that the MDDA must adhere to. Those systems are, the first one is the MDDA Act that we are talking about, the Public Finance Management Act, the ICASA Act, and the Electronic Communications Act, and the Labor Relations Act.
Thank you, Ms. Ndazana. Can we proceed and ask Honorable Kedan?
What can you do to ensure that the media diversity in NDDA is safeguarded and managed? Thank you.
Can you repeat the question? I'm sorry.
What can you do
to
ensure that media diversity in MDDA is safeguarded and managed?
Okay. As we know that MDDA is meant for e-diversity. So e-diversity, it encourages all the citizens to be part and to participate within the work of MDDA in making sure that all the communities have access to information through communication channels in the languages that they understand. And also they will be able to assist us in making sure that we encourage local content amongst the work of MDA.
What different strategies can you deploy in the MDDA to ensure both
the law,
nurturing and society?
As you all know that we have to work according to the policies that we all agreed to. The MDDA cannot work in silos in ensuring the local content. We have ICASA, that is licensing the radio stations. So ICASA, before it gives license to the station, there are reasons for the communities to want to have a community radio station. So I want to believe ICASA and MDDA, if they can be able to work together, they can be able to enter a community development and the skills within the community. We are having as radio stations.
Thanks. Can we then proceed? Next is Honorable Zedi. My apologies. Can I take Honorable Rose? Are you ready? Proceed, Honorable Zedi.
Good day, Vienna.
Good day, sir.
Are you okay?
Yes, I'm okay.
When print and electronic media, in your understanding, what distinction do you see? And secondly, do you think our saying print and electronic media, in your own understanding, what distinction do you see? And secondly, do you think they serve a different purpose in society? So it's two in one.
One, in answering the distinction between the print media and the electronic media, I would say the electronic media is immediate. And then the print media, I would say it is not immediate because some of them, they produce their papers monthly, weekly, but with radio, what is happening right now, we can be able to put it live on air. And that is the immediacy I'm talking about. Another issue would be, say, radio is regulated. We are accountable to ICASA as a regulator body. And for now, from where I'm coming from, I would say the electronic media is organized because we have a forum. Maybe this is because of the regulations that we have. As different, as opposed to the print media. And with print, you can go back and revise what you want to hear. But with radio, if you miss it now, then you can't come back unless you are doing recording. That would be my difference. With the second question was, yes. I wouldn't say they are serving the different peoples. We are serving the different, we are on the same peoples, but we do things differently. I guess it is because of the regulations and the popularity of the communication channel that the people at grassroots would want it to follow. Because people that we are serving, they are from grassroots level. Some of them, they are unable to read these papers. They don't have money to buy newspapers. But with radio is just next to them. It's convenient. They can do whatever whilst they are listening to radio station. And part of that would be to say, radio, it has an advantage as opposed to the print media in that if maybe you are having the state of the nation address, or do that example, we can do a live broadcast so that you can be able to access what the president is saying. Because if venue would prove to be a problem, it cannot accommodate everyone. And then if you miss that on radio, you have to go to the newspaper, then you are already late. Because if radio has already done that, and then the next day you have to buy the newspaper. Okay, thanks.
Well, my question has to do with media literacy and electronic literacy in determining or achieving equality among citizens. In what way do you think these two things contribute to that, and what steps could be taken by the MDTA to promote both equality of citizens through these two mediums? And then, what is your critique or understanding of community media today? Its strengths and weaknesses, and the prospect of community media, particularly in light of DTT. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, sir. in determining the issue of media literacy, I would start by saying the processes that NDTA is doing, that of consultation, of engaging with the media practitioners, it is correct. But I would like to start by saying, for MDA to achieve media literacy, it has to start with the practitioners of the media, because we find out that they are not capacitated of what is needed. Okay, what do we mean about the media literacy? So, if the radio practitioners, they are aware of the media literacy, then they will be able to pass the information to the communities they are saving. They will be able to encourage them to be part of the processes. To promote the equality of citizens, one of the mandates of NGDA is to encourage participation amongst communities. If we want equality, we would then be able to allow every citizen to come and raise their concerns, and then those concerns will be able to talk about them as equally as possible. If I may make an example, I would say most of the communities, I would make an example of historic institutions, like the institution that I am coming from. The institution will be 100 years next year, but we are very quiet, even the media, about that, starting from the institution. So if maybe we do understand the potential of media literacy, then we will be able to touch on those issues, like the heritage institutions and many more, because those are the things that we will try to encourage the upgrowing youth and remind them about our culture. And then the critique of community media. It is hard to say, but I have to say it. The critique of community media is that, as I just said, we are not, how can I put it? We are not as ready as expected to the migration. For one, the communities we are serving, they are not aware, they're just aware that there will be switch off and migration switch off in June. But there are things that we are not talking about. The things like, we all know that we are not equal. Some of the community members that we are serving, they are surviving on grants, social grants. And then there are questions they would want to know, like, if maybe I did not manage to have a set-top box by the 30th or 15th of June, what is going to happen to me? Am I going to be subsidized if we migrate? I am trying to say we are quiet as media. We are not taking any GDG awareness campaigns. Maybe we don't approach the relevant department to address those issues. Another lady.
Thank you very much, Chair. There's two parts of my question. The first part is, in what instances do you think press freedom should be limited, if ever? That's the first part. The second part is, which mechanisms do you think work best to hold the media accountable for its reporting? Thank you.
Come again, second question.
which mechanisms do you think work best to hold the media accountable for its reporting?
What influence should be limited to Hindi media?
The first question is, in what instances, or in which cases, do you think press freedom should be limited, if ever? That's the first question. The second part is, which mechanisms work best, in your opinion, to hold the media accountable for its reporting?
All right. I would start by the first question, to limit the print media. I guess it would be proper for the print media to be legislated just like community media. And also, we do a search on whether the promise they are making, they are, is implemented, because they would write a community newspaper promising that they will address the needs of the community they are serving. But you find that in Doba there are no news in those newspapers. What is there, it is just full of pictures that have no meaning to the community. So what I would suggest is to exercise the Legislation Act to the print media. And the mechanisms that can work best to compliance measures or reporting measures would be to say, if we can implement policies are there, but if we can implement the policies that they agreed upon in terms of compliance and other regulated measures, and the mechanism that can work best, you will find out that some of them, they want to account, but they don't know how. So somehow capacitation is needed. And also, the last one, if maybe we can encourage the media to work together to form some kind of forum or a cooperative where they can be able to talk in one voice, then maybe we can be able to address some of the issues.
Thank you. I can proceed to Honorable Madisha.
Yeah. Good afternoon again.
Good.
I've gone through your CV and even have listened to your input when open, and I've not actually gotten the actual management skill that you can put before the committee. And we are here talking about MDBA and so on and so on. We basically will be looking into policies. I think my colleagues here have raised that, perhaps very many people that have got to be managed. Will you be able to do that? I think we need to understand that. Will we have that capacity? Okay.
Yes, I would definitely have that capacity of managing many people. The best way I would do that is to pay attention to corporate governance issues and the Legislation Act, that is the MPDA, is to adhere to, like the Public Finance Management Act. When using that, I have to make sure that there's annual performance plan that I will be able to see whether we are doing what we promised to do for the year. This is the tool that will enable myself to detect whether the organization is growing or is going backward, because
from time to time, I can have conduct with the internal auditors, maybe of the organization, in trying to manage the finances. I think for me, the best skill in managing that would for me to exercise the leadership skills. The best one would be for me to look at the strategy of the organization. That strategy will give me a mandate as to what am I supposed to be doing versus the budget that we provided for me to achieve those strategy. Thanks. Honorable Sotese?
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Yeah. From your CV as the manager of the Fort Community Radio, you see one of the duties is to determine what goes on air and supervise on air personnel. You know, to any person that could know preconceptions of limiting or trying to censor, you know, freedom. How you convince people out there that you know the perception is just a perception, it's not what is happening. So just to give us understanding when they you determine what goes on air and supervise on air personnel.
Okay, thanks, ma'am. First and foremost, the presenters that we are using as community media, I made it clear from start that they need to be capacitated. And that is why, as a station manager, you have to make sure that you manage what goes on air and what goes off air. By that, I mean, we are serving the community. So what we do in our programming, we have slots where we allow community members to express issues that they would want us to talk about in our radio station. So what we do, we invite the guests from the community to come and talk about those issues. There are broadcast ethics that we adhere to. So we don't allow things like vulgar language that we avoid them. In our programming, there are things like tobacco that we are not supposed to advertise. So we are also looking at those things. But the content we are flighting is purely coming from the issues raised by the community we are serving. Then for us is to facilitate the information by inviting the experts of that particular topic to talk more and inform our community.
Okay.
Right, honourable members, we've gone up to thus far and we appreciate your detailed responses in terms of addressing all the questions that we have raised. And we want to really thank you for the engagement. At this point, we are going to wish you all the best. We're still proceeding with interviews. We'll be proceeding even tomorrow as well. So after that, we can then do a determination of who are the three that are going to be placed. I explain to you the reports. Yes. Thank you very much and good luck.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much for the opportunity that you have given me. It was a first attempt in learning. Thank you very much.
Thank you. So, okay.
There we go.
Let me just outline that you've got 45 minutes for all the questions that you have to answer from these members.
The first member there is Honorable Tikana. I don't remember to go to the time this time. Honorable Teddy, there will be a contestation of gold and yellow. So that's Honorable Tikana, Honorable Teddy, Honorable Soltesi. Honorable Magician. Honorable Davis, there is an honorable member seated at the back, a back seat there, is Honorable Lose. I'm Honorable Muloy Morupa. So, for 45 minutes, that's the time allocated to make sure that once we ask a question, we spread it across, don't say 30 minutes on one question, but make sure that to spread them across so that we are all able to ask you the question. The other issue is that the post that you are interviewed for, it's actually three posts for MDA. Two of them are full-time for the full period. One of them is a post that is filling up your resignation, so it's not a full-time, it's just within that period. So this is a subcommittee will sit at the end and determine where do they locate to along those. Like I said, welcome and feel free, relax so that we can get all the information we want from you. Right. Just as a starter, if you can be able to just detail yourself, you're just telling us about who you are. Tell us about you, introduce yourself thoroughly. All you do that introduction, you link it to your qualifications, to your experience, and to the expertise in this interview. And I'm leaving it over to you then.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much for this opportunity. I'm 31 years old. I hold a degree in art. It's a Master of Arts in Media and Communication. I also hold a diploma in television production, a certificate in business communication and report writing. Currently, I am studying for a postgraduate diploma in higher education and training. I've also just been accepted by UCT to do a PhD in media. And my topic is basically about radio, the impact of radio on rural dwellers, where I'll be basically arguing whether mainstream radio on rural dwellers has as much power as it is said to have. And that topic was basically motivated by the work I used to do for Parliament. I was Parliament's audiovisual communication specialist, responsible for representing Parliament to the LABC, doing air councils, booking airtime on all LABC registrations. Committee would come to me for airtime requests if they've got public hearings or interviews they want to do on radio, then I would book those public hearings. That gave me an idea of how much airtime Parliament spends on radio, SAP radio and community radio, because I also used to deal with community radio as well. And my argument, which formed the basis of the topic of my PhD research, was that not enough funds are spent on community radio, and yet community radio is at the heartbeat of the nation. And yet there's this notion that mainstream radio, like mainstream media even in general, because we used to deal with TV as well, is more recognized in terms of its listenership. But does the listenership mean that they've got more impact on the people on the ground? Moving on to my expertise. As I've mentioned, I am a trained media and communication specialist, but I regard myself more of a development specialist because of the work I've done in the industry, in the media industry, because I've been in the media working for the SABC. My first job experience basically was with the television industry. I graduated from Durban University of Technology with a television diploma. I joined several television production companies in Johannesburg. 2 years later, after having been in the TV industry,
I received a call from a program manager of Gagasi FM, whom I'm used to send content to when I was a student, a television student. So 2 years later, he approached me because Gagasi FM was being formulated to say, you're a student that used to send me content back in the days when I was with East Coast Radio. What are you doing now? And I said, I'm now in Johannesburg, working in the TV industry. But he said, back in the day when you were a student sending content, your content was groundbreaking. I'd like you to come and join Gagasi FM in Durban and be our main producer. That's how I moved from television to radio. I stayed with Gagasi FM for about 2 years, and then I was poached by SABC, a call from SABC's, Ukhozi FM's station manager, who mentioned that head office had directed them to call the person who's producing Gagasi FM at the show because they were stealing listeners from the station, basically. So I moved, they pushed me from Gagasi to join Ukhozi. My mandate is Ukhozi because at the time there was this notion that Ukhozi is basically a Durban radio station. Well, it is Durban based, but it's a national radio station. There was this notion that it's just a Devon, a provincial radio station. So what they wanted to do at the time was to promote Ukhozi nationally, starting with Johannesburg and the surrounding areas. So when they moved me from Gagasi, this was my mandate. I thought about different strategies to ensure that I see the mandate through. And one of them suggests that they move one of the main drive shows to Johannesburg. Which was the afternoon dry show. It moved to Johannesburg to be there with other SABC radio station and SABC radio stations at SABC Radio Park. So Ukhozi's afternoon dry show moved to Auckland Park as part of spreading its wings and making it visible in Gauteng. From there, I asked if I would spread the footprint of Ukhozi by having outside broadcast every Friday. And my show, the afternoon drive show, was the only show, only Ukhozi FM show based in Johannesburg. The rest of the shows on the stations were based in Durban still. So we were mandated with the cast to ensure that people in Johannesburg, Mpumalanga and surrounding areas are aware of the visibility of Ukhozi. I did that for 3 years, every Friday without fail. Ukhozi's afternoon drive show would visit different malls. So we had community outreach, if I may call it so. Different malls, we partnered with different commercials whom I as the producer had to, businesses whom I as the producer had to approach to say, we've got this initiative, we want Ukhozi to be visible all over Gauteng and Mpumalanga and surrounding areas. We'd like you on board. I got MTN on board. I got SLC on board, and then I approach entertainers because people want to see people they see on TV. They get excited if they see them, as much as they like to cause you afternoon pressure. But if we come as a group with actors, with entertainers who are there to provide entertainment for free, musicians would sing while we are in the Ubi van broadcasting live from certain mall, which promoted the mall, promoted the area we were in. I did that, and the content I produced, obviously I had to make sure I research content thoroughly, and I went beyond the scope of the entertainment drive show. Instead of just entertaining, I entertained. I took SABC's mandate of building the nation and promoting patriotism very seriously. It showed in every content that I produced. As part of my CV, I even submitted a letter which was written to me by Mr. Simon Ekeni for the work that I did during the World Cup show, during the World Cup for SABC, where I produced groundbreaking content, and that was recognized because they gave me that letter of recognition. And then 3 years later, or just about 3 years later, I decided I had done a bit because the listenership had improved. Ukhozi FM listenership in Mpumalanga, the Gauteng and surrounding area, it was huge now. And the station had a footprint there, had listeners there. I decided my mandate had been done, and therefore I moved abroad to go to my master's because I felt I had to enhance my education. I came back with my master's about a year later. I passed with commendation. When I got back to South Africa, Parliament hired me as their audiovisual specialist, audiovisual communication specialist. And part of my mandate was to be Parliament's representative to the SABC, to community radio stations, and to commercial radio stations. I basically can say in Parliament I was an all-rounder. I provided a time, whichever committee that needed a time, or needed a script written in a radio-friendly way, or needed a radio concept developed, they would come to me. I stayed in Parliament for about close to 3 years. I think it was 2 years, nine months. And then I moved to the University of Fort Hare, where I currently am based. Because I felt I've skilled enough in the industry. I've worked in a political environment. I've worked in the actual industry. Now I felt I need to disseminate my skills to a younger generation. And I had always wanted to work for the University of Fort Hare for personal reasons. So when I saw the post, I decided I'm going to apply and they accepted. At Fort Hare, I'm media production skills lecturer, and I also lecture corporate communication. Media production skills is basically teaching them about production, writing, script writing, script development, editing, camera work, because I specialize in both TV and radio, so I teach them everything to do with production as far as those two are concerned. And then, because whilst doing my media and communication qualifications, I also studied publishing, so I teach them writing for newspaper as well.
Thank you. Your introduction was really long, very good to actually give us an understanding on other areas. Possibly the other issues would have been much shorter because they will lead to the introduction. For an example, I would like to say, just tell us in the contents of the entire explanation, what are the comments you'd like to make about the NDAA Act?
NDAA Act, it addresses the injustices of the past. When you consider the history of South African media, you'd find that communities in the rural areas, in the remote areas, had no access to the media. Even though the media, even in peri-urban communities, was tenured, but they had some sort of media. They could receive media, even though it was centered. But in the rural areas, they were excluded from receiving media, if I say so. They were excluded from receiving the media, or even accessing the media. So the NDAA speaks to redressing the exclusion of those communities from accessing the media. It speaks to the diversity and development of the media in the rural areas, which for me is something I'm very passionate about, because it also motivated the reason why I decided to leave Parliament to go and work in a rural area of Ali, because I wanted to develop the media skills at that university and at that area. So the NDAA Act for me is, I'd say it works in terms of correcting the wrongs of the past as far as the media is concerned.
I just wanted to know two things. One, what can you do to ensure that media diversity is safeguarded in Nigeria? And two, what strategies can you deploy in the MDDA to ensure that both nurturing and safeguarding are implemented? Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm sorry, Onkiani, may I please ask you to repeat your question?
Which one?
Both.
Okay. What can you do to ensure that media diversity is safeguarded and nurtured? And number two, what different strategies can you deploy in the MDDA to ensure both the nurturing and the safeguarding?
I think media diversity is a very broad term, and it's very important in South Africa. I would ensure that we invest more on community media and on newspapers, especially community media that reaches a whole lot of people in the community. The strategies that I would actually put in place in the MDDA. Whilst working in Parliament, if I can just go there, whilst working in Parliament, I realized that community media is, there's this sense of undermining it, and there's this sense of not taking it seriously, in a way. For instance, when putting a time on community media, we don't deal with community media directly most of the time. We don't deal with this station and that station and that station. But we deal with, this is from my experience and from the conversations I've had with people in community media. We deal with service providers who are actually, I'd say, gatekeepers in community media. So if I'm booking a campaign for 700,000, I pay NCLF, Motswako Media, and they are the ones who then disseminate from whatever it I pay. If the campaign was 700,000, then they would be the ones who would give community media however much they feel community media deserves. And that, for me, is does not promote fairness, and does not promote media diversity. Because we are these gatekeepers. So I strongly believe that maybe such entities like your NCRF, your Motswako, I'm just making them for example, they could be regulated. If not, then the MDDA can form some sort of a standard, what can I call it, standard level agreement between the community media and the service providers. And in that standard level agreement, it must be stipulated that both these parties, if there are funds coming in of this nature, because having been the one who was controlling the budget, I know exactly how much they were paid. They were paid a whole lot of money, but community media did not get that money, or does not get as much as the service provider got. So that standard level agreement could actually stipulate, could be formulated by MDDA and stipulate that this party, which is community service provider, and this party, a community leader, can get this much if there is a campaign. There must be some sort of regulation or some sort of terms and conditions with regards to that relationship, and to promote media diversity. And also, to promote media diversity, I think it's very important to, first of all, and foremost, educate communities about the actual diversity of the media. Educate communities about the media. Media literacy, in other words, would play a huge role in diversifying the media.
Thanks. Let's proceed to Honorable Ndlozi.
Yeah, well, thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Two questions, really. One is, what do you think is the impact of DTT on community media?
and the broader environment within which community media is set up. What is the environment basically of community media today, strengths and weaknesses, and finally the importance of media literacy and e-literacy to equal citizenship. What did the MDDA's role in that practically? Sure.
Can I just double check if I got your question correctly, Honorable Zazi? Honorable Zazi, can I just double check if I got your question correctly?
No, sure.
It's the impact of BTC on community media. That was your first question. The second question is it's the strength and weaknesses of community media. Strength and weaknesses of community media. The third one, what is meant by community media? Or impact of community media?
You could sum it up by saying the environment of community media today,
and
strengths and weaknesses. And then the final question has to do with media literacy and e-literacy in relation to equal citizenship and the things MDA could do to contribute to that.
Thank you very much for your question. I'm going to start with media literacy.
Okay, let me see before you proceed, just to alert you that you still have four more other questions, so that you just be careful, so that you can get all the questions coming in.
Media literacy. I feel like media literacy is very important in society. In any society, it's not just a luxury, but it's a necessity. Media literacy contributes to the enhancement of democracy. A country that prides itself with being a democratic country must invest in media literacy, especially within the marginalized and the disadvantaged community. Because it is only when those communities, and every other society in South Africa, but I'm just specifically speaking to those, it's only when societies are media literate that they can be able to engage the state on issues concerning them. They can be able to question the status quo. They can be able to even question the agenda of the media. Because now they're not just looking at the media as just a story on a newspaper or the news. They are now media literate, which grooms them with the ability to look at the story behind the story. When people are media literate, they are able to promote dialogue even amongst each other. For the sake of time, I'm just going to end there with this one and move to the environment of community media, the strengths and weaknesses. The environment of community media in South Africa, as far as I'm concerned, needs to be developed. Organizations like MDA and other donors who are interested in the sector are doing as much as they can. But unfortunately, the demand outweighs the supply. There's so many community media out there that are underfunded, are under-equipped, and I'm not talking under-equipped in terms of technical equipment. I'm talking under-equipped even with regards to human resources, even with regards to infrastructure. So they need to be developed. So the environment is getting there in terms of being fully functional. But there's so much work still needed to do. the weaknesses of community media. I'd say, for me, what's important is for community media to know their DNA. Because what I've observed from listening to different community media, listening to different community media stations and buying different community media newspapers, from what I observed, community media seems to forget their DNA. And that, for me, is the biggest weakness. It could actually be detrimental to their existence. By that, I mean, they mimic the mainstream media, forgetting that mainstream media has a given mandate as compared to community media. But community media tends to mimic the mainstream media, which could be detrimental because then they neglect the community. So the biggest weakness would be, for me, I'd say, is for them to really understand, they need to understand the core of their foundation, the core of their formation, which is to be the ears, eyes, and the voices of the people on the ground. I'm going to move to their strength. The strength?
Yeah, please.
Can I?
Yeah,
but there is, keep it short. Okay, I'm going to try my level best to keep it short. The strength of community media. I say the strength of community media is the fact that they, for me, this is the biggest strength that they have. They have the ability to take global phenomena, national development goals, global national development goals, and national, they've got the ability to take national development goals and conceptualize them to the framework of the local community, to be understood by the local community. For me, I'd say that they are biggest strength. Also, the fact that they are accessible to the local community. They are at the corners that mainstream media cannot even reach. Which is why I encourage a relationship between mainstream media and community media, whereby community media gives mainstream media content that is in the corner that mainstream media cannot reach. And in return, mainstream media can give back to the community media by improving their production skills and training them in their tech. I think that's it.
Yeah, okay. Just to say that if you can take more than 4 minutes on the remaining ones, it means you are not going to answer the last one. So I'm going to Honorable Teddy. We still have Honorable Dave, Honorable Madisha, and Honorable Dave. And now we are already at left with very few minutes. Proceed, Honorable Teddy.
Yeah. Print and electronic media. I'm interested in the distinctions that you see between the two. Secondly, do you think they serve a different purpose in society? And I hope you do.
Yes, it's very clear. The difference between the two, electronic media is immediacy is what differentiates it from print media. Electronic media is accessible anytime, anyway, in your own space, basically. And the strength of electronic media is that it's participatory, meaning the user can participate immediately with the content producer. Moving on to print media. Print media, is not as immediate as electronic media. You get on intervals. For instance, newspapers, you find that a newspaper is available on Sunday, so you have to wait for the next Sunday to get it, or it's available daily, but at a certain time. But print media also, for me, is still very relevant, because not everybody has the ability to use the electronic media. Not everybody has the ability to understand even
how electronic media works. So that's the first one. The second one, do they serve a different purpose? I'd say they serve a same purpose, which is to inform citizens, ensure that they serve their people at different speeds.
Okay, I will proceed to Honorable Davis.
In which instances do you think press freedom should be limited, if ever? Thanks.
Press freedom should be limited if it tends to abuse the rights of the people who are at the center of the story. I think that the if it tends to infringe on the on human rights, then it should be limited.
Can we then proceed to Honorable Madisha?
Thank you. Well, you earlier indicated that you had, as part of your responsibilities, the budget management, of course, within a smaller milieu, parliamentary realm. Okay. Now, if you were given, or you were to be given this post, and they were talking about the MDA, you were talking about a very big, in our opinion, of course, and of course I believe you know that, will you be able to handle that? The proper management, administration, and so on. Thank you.
I believe I would be able to handle that. As much as I believe I'm a creative person, and I believe in my media experience, I'm also very much aware, or I'm in the know, as far as corporate governance is concerned. I understand the goals and the policies of the PFMA. I understand King 3. I understand the Act that governs the corporate sector, that governs the board directors. So I have no doubt that I can be able to implement strategies that would move the MTA forward and see through the goals of the MTA and implement what the MTA is all about.
Okay. Can I pass Honorable Madisha and go to Honorable Sote?
Thank you, President. Apart from your work obligation, what role do you play in the community? Like your voluntary work of some kind to share the skills with other young people and the poor communities you've fed to? Do you belong to any community organization that you work through to access the needy people?
As I mentioned earlier, leaving Parliament, I was very comfortable and I enjoyed my job. But living in Parliament, or working in Parliament, for instance, they exposed me to different communities in different corners of the country, communities that I never thought I could ever even go to. When I went to Alice with the NCOP, when the former chairperson of the NCOP was having a public lecture there, I got exposed to their universities, or to the university, to the radio station there, Fort Hay FM. And obviously I interacted with students there, but at the time I was still working for Parliament. When I saw the ad to say Fort Hay was a media production person, I went to apply there. The reason I applied for that is mainly that, to give back to that community. Because I realized that that radio station, because I spoke to people then, who work for education, I realized I could actually enhance and help them, enhance their skills and help them. Now what I did, the first thing I did when I got to Fort Hay was to visit the radio station to say, I'm now based here. This is what I can offer. This is where I've been. And I'm not even asking for any financial compensation. It's part of the expansion of what I do
with the university. I teach the students. But when I went to the station, I interviewed their presenters, I interviewed the people who work there. I found out they don't have a producer. They don't have producers. No one produces a show there. So I decided I am a qualified producer. I've worked every piece, I've worked for commercial stations. I want to give back to this community. I spoke to the station manager of Forte FM to say, I want to consult. I want to teach them skills. So that's in progress. We had a meeting even last week to speak about that very same issue, to say, I want to consult, I want to come here, and I want to form a relationship between the media department of the university and the station, because I've also discovered that there's no relationship there. If I teach media production involves skills, involves practicals. If I teach media production, I can't just teach theory. So I had to form a relationship, which I'm now forming, for my students to go to Forte FM and do practical, but in return, I want to give back to the production team of the station by teaching them to produce, to present, to develop concepts and everything that has to do with it. That is ongoing. The production team is very excited about it. I'm very excited about it, and the station manager is excited about it. And I won't be getting anything for it or any financial compensation.
Okay. Honorable members, is there a follow-up that you want?
If there was time, I would have won this one, but there is no time at all.
She ended up saving a bit at the end. Honorable Rose.
You may have already pointed this out. What is your political background? That girl could work in Parliament. Are you linked to any political party, or have you played any meaningful position role in political parties?
And let me take yours, Honorable Marisha, so that she answers why. Limited time, yes. Do you still want to go with the question?
No, let's leave it there. I think this one has done well. It's okay. Thank you very much. Okay.
My question to any political party, I do not have any connection to any political party. I am following politics. Obviously, I'm a South African citizen. I must know what's happening in the country. I must know what's happening in my sector. I must know what's happening politically in the country. But to say I'm connected to any political party, no. My only connection to politics is with the political communication course, the government, and in my master's thesis, I also wrote about the representation of Africa in the Western media, taking it from the days of colonialism, and that has a bit of politics. Other than that, I'm just a citizen who just views politics on TV and newspapers and follows it, because I worked in the political environment, and I believe every citizen must know what's happening in the political sphere of the country they live in.
Yeah. Pearl, Namisila, it was very interesting to engage with you. We really enjoyed listening to you. We also wish you all the best. We're also going to ultimately do a roundup, do an assessment after we've actually met all of the people who have been lined up for interviews. But thank you very much and good luck.
Thank you all. Thank you so much for the opportunity. I really, really appreciate it.
No, maybe I was actually asking you for the planning.
Okay, let me just explain, because my role is I'm a sign language interpreter.
Yes,
so Mr. Blosser will explain how does the process work. My role and
No. You know what? I was talking about the admin part. But in terms of the let me direct you to that.
Yeah, let me give a direction. First, okay, I'll be a bit slow because I must give you space to interpret. Firstly, I'm going to introduce Mr. Bose, as I did to the members. Then introduce members to Mr. Bloss. And then thereafter, I'll explain how the interview is going to take place. Is that fine? Great.
Yes.
Okay, so I've already introduced Mr. Bloss. We are, honorable members, now interviewing Mr. Jabulani Bloss. He has introduced, and I'm going to introduce yourself to Mr. Jabulani Bloss. Mr. Bloss, there in the corner, with a red tie, it's Honorable Kekan. Then next to him, it's Honorable Teddy. And next to Honorable Teddy, it's Honorable Tsotetsi. Next to her, it's Honorable Madisha. At the corner here, behind the bishop, it's Honorable Davis. We have the member seated at the back. It's Honorable Ndozi. Okay, and I'm chairing the subcommittee. It's Honorable Moloi Moroba. And a special welcome to you.
Thank you. Okay.
So, and we hope you're going to be as free as possible. So that you can be able to tap the question.
It's constrained, but thank you.
Okay. Now, I need to also explain some processes that are entailed within this interview. Mr. Puso, we're interviewing for three people. Two full pirot and one filling up a resign post. We have done this the whole morning. We are now on the ninth candidate. We are the ninth since this morning. Yes. You've got 45 minutes. I would see how, maybe if possible, because there will be a gap of interpretation, if you can be able to fill it up so that we don't disadvantage you in terms of the interpretation process. You can be able to get the questions and respond to them. So obviously I'm definitely going to allocate some extra time there so that we, maybe around an hour for us to finish your interview.
Okay,
and then now the first question. We'd like you, Mr. Brosser, to explain to us about yourself. We want to know you more in relation to your qualifications, your experience, and the expertise within this interview. Over to you.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Jabulani Bloss. I think you can read me, Chair, and honorable members. I'm an open book. Actually, I'm not too sure where to start. On a professional level, Chair and honorable members, I'm a qualified accountant from the University of Johannesburg. That time it was called Telecon Bad Vatafront. And then after I completed my studies, okay, just to revert back, at that level, I was involved in different community activities. I became provisional director of Deaf Federation of South Africa in Gauteng, and I was focusing only in Gauteng for about 3 years. And then later on, I became a public servant. And just to mention that Deaf was an NGO, and a Gauteng government, I worked there for 11 years, and that's when my formidable experience was acquired in the public sector. And then I also got exposed into a lot of training programs, public service management, economic training programs, and I think that experience molded me and to become who I am right now, or at the moment. And as I mentioned that I was involved in various community activities. When I was working for helping government 11 years, I resigned, and then afterwards I went back into community activities because that's where my passion is. And in that level, that's where you get exposed into diverse sectors and experiences. And as a deaf person, you know, disability is my passion. As an activist and an advocate for persons with disabilities, and at that time, you know, one would see that technology and access and communication is very, very vital. Like examples, I would say that, you know, a deaf person, if you want to access information, you would want to identify a thing that will assist you to communicate. But with the advent of communication, I can, you know, I can send emails, I can send SMSs, and I can also access diverse communication systems. And also, it helps one to know how to lobby for equal access on the basis of informed experience. And on the public service level, when I was working at the public service, we initiated what is commonly known as the indicators, which is commonly known as indicators. I was the person who initiated that because I was also part of the team that we had to develop a policy which is aligned with that, with those indicators. And during that time, it was not popular. Like, for instance, we had disability issues, gender issues, youth issues, and leadership. And we did not have a center where we can align all those programs in place. And I was part of the team to ensure that all those programs that the government envisaged to implement in the communities, we had to align them. And that time, it was not aligned. So I feel like that was a hallmark of what government is achieving at the moment.
No, thank you. Do you want to tell us something about the NDDA Act? The Media Development and Diversity Act.
From what I know about the NDDA Act, I think it started being operational in 2013, but it was then ascended in June 2002. And I think the main focus, which is 7 objectives, and they're very broad, is to encourage ownership and access and control of the media, and the development of human resources, to conduct public awareness And those are the key objectives of the MDDs. I've just mentioned a few, which the seven though. And you mentioned the Act, Chair. There's a clause that says that MDDs should, it's the source of they must have the source of revenue. And the source of revenue is the national fiscus. And how to access that fiscus via Department of Communication. And also they should have broadcasting partners. I think right now that partners is about 0.2%. And I'm sorry, interpreter's mistake. Interpreter's mistake. The 0.2 fund, I think they come from the broadcasters partners, and 1.2 million is from the print partners. So they have three revenue streams where they access the funding, which is the government, the broadcasting partners, and the print media. And that's what is mentioned in the clause or in the Act. But then one would want to explore or perhaps make mention about as to how does the MDD is governed. They appoint board members, and the board meets about four times in the year, and they also have to a special meeting, but not more than eight times. In the year. I think that brought us into corporate governance and governance issues. And I think I've answered each other.
Thank you very much. I'll proceed to Honorable Gigan.
Yes, I've got one question. What can you do to ensure that the media diversity is safeguarded and nurtured?
Thank you for the question, Honorable Chair. My response is to ensure that the MDDA reflects and represents diversity of the communities, and also to ensure that there is relevance when it comes to the services in the communities. And secondly, is to ensure that their products must impact the communities, and it must also touch the people. And I guess that way that the projects that MDD delivers, they deliver to our people. And also the people inside the MDDA, they should be developed to be able to service the people. And the third part of the diversity is to ensure that their finances are well managed and are in order. And then I think that also would touch on the issue of governance, because with good governance, the organization will be stable and it will be sustainable. Thank you.
So I will proceed to Honorable Ndlozi.
Mine is a very simple one. How would you describe the environment of community media today in South Africa in terms of its strengths and weaknesses? Secondly, in what ways will DTT transform community radio? And finally, what is the significance of electronic media and electronic literacy and general literacy for equal citizenship, like media literacy, for attainment of equal citizenship, and particularly for your interest of people with disabilities. And practical programs MDDA can engage to transform that.
Thank you, Honorable, for that question.
You know, for me, there's an issue of community radio that we don't know about, so I'm a deaf person. So radio is not a product, but in any case, I'll answer the question.
Chairperson, we must check because I never said anything about the radio. No. My, let me repeat because I never said anything about the radio. My question is, one, your critique of the environment that community media functions in today in terms of its weaknesses and its strengths and where do you think it would go. Two, how DTT has transformed community media. And then three, media literacy and electronic literacy for the attainment of equal citizenship and the things MTDA could do to contribute to that. Nothing about the radio. Perfect.
No, I think I had radio. Interpreter's mistake. My apologies for that. Okay. Just to answer the question about the strengths and the weaknesses. The development of community media meets the needs of development. And from what I understand is that the core values of development is to give people choices or to make people to be able to choose from what is available when it comes to media. So people now have a choice when it comes to community media or variety of community media. And I think those are the strengths, because people can read or they can access any media. But the weaknesses which I have observed is that most of the community media are dependent on government funding. And that is one of the issues, that without funding, unfortunately, we'll have forced to close shops. So MDD has to meet the needs. How can they meet the needs of the community to make sure that they should have a strategy to ensure that how do we, if we don't have funding, how do we make sure that we sustain ourselves so that we'll be able to generate more income? And the second point, on electronic media, I think those are the issues that are still developing at this ancient time. Because in the past, we did not have Twitter in social media. We did not have Facebook. And now it's more like social media and electronic media. It's one of the things that are now people are using. And MDA should ensure that perhaps they will focus on online media as a way of a revenue stream. But I just wanted to also touch on how can electronic media change the society. I think it's very important that MDA should focus on that, because as a deaf person, is that I have observed, especially in the MDA report, is they've never mentioned anything about electronic media, especially when it comes to the Center for Deaf People. Like from the 2011 census, it says that we have about 1.1 million deaf people in South Africa, but we have a VRS, which is video relay services for the deaf people. It is not there, but you know, if MDDA can definitely plan for that in the future to have VRS, so that deaf people can also have equal access, and if we can venture into that, it will impact on many people's lives.
But then the question is that how do we capacitate the people, and how do we capacitate MDDA to make sure that electronic media is changed and is mainstreamed in the communities? I hope I've answered the question, Honorable Rose.
Okay, we're going to allow a stop of interpreter. Okay, I know you've passed 20 minutes now. Rest a bit. Okay, next is on a...
Is the boss, you just touched the issue of electronic media while you were responding to Honorable Dozer's question. I want you to assist here in your own understanding the distinctions between electronic media and print media. And secondly, do you think the two serve a different purpose in society? And I hope the question is clear.
Yes, Honorable Member, the question is here. Thank you. Yes, the question is clear. These two, print media and electronic media, also they have the same purpose. But the print media increases the literacy so that people can read and also be informed. The electronic media is more visual, and at the same time, they have a combined effect on it to inform the public. I would say, yes, there's a convention between these two, the print and the electronic media. Thank you.
Let's proceed to Honorable Madisha. I'll come back to you, Honorable.
Okay. Good afternoon. Going through your CV, I've seen that you have been in charge of leadership of a number of institutions. Now, what we are looking at here, MDDA, we're actually looking at a bigger institution which will require that the policies are looked at, which will include, of course, the issue of the finances, etc., etc. Do you think you'll have the capacity to handle that?
Thank you, Honorable Member, and thank you for a wonderful question. I have been exposed to different forms of leadership as well as the management styles and the follow-up. And I've been played the position of management and leadership at the national. As a leader. I can follow the leadership if all the issues of governance are in order. And as well, I can lead the organization if I'm put of the position of the leadership. And also, it's very important to understand what the organization needs, and also the policy framework of the organization and the governance, the policy framework which governs the organization. Yes, I have the skills. I have ability to do that. Also, looking at the financial point of view, and also at the same, as well as the organization budget, and also the budget needs to be followed very well. That's why I would say to you, most organizations
Okay, most organizations have a culture. Not all organizations, organizations have a culture of discipline. That's where the leadership, the culture of the organization, and also the issues of human resources at the same time are addressed too. The budget, the financial, are managed properly. In terms of a PFMA, if I can be given that opportunity, yes, I'm sure I can lead. As well, I can contribute in the organization, in the leadership of the organization. Thank you.
So, thank you. Honorable Davis.
Thank you, Chairperson. In which instances do you think that press freedom should be limited, if ever?
Thank you, and my apologies, I just needed a clarification on this challenging question. Now, let me be clear. You're talking about the press limit or press. Okay, just be clear so that I make sure I understand this question.
I'm going to rephrase the question. Is it ever justifiable to place limits on press freedom?
Good afternoon, you have
had expressed your passion towards people living with disabilities. If you happen to be appointed, are you not going to be biased? Towards people with disabilities at the expense of those who are able. As you understand that the MDTA is dealing with the transformation of society, can you convince us that you're going to be impartial?
Thank you. Yes, a very touching touch at my core, deep in the bottom of my heart. Yes, I have been exposed at different levels, most recently as a chief executive officer of a disability, disabled of DPSA, Disabled People of South Africa. At that position that I held, I was expected to speak and represent all persons with disabilities in South Africa. I mean, visually impaired, deaf, and different and physical disabled, all different disabilities. So, that gave me a unique experience to articulate and express the issues of development, of inclusive development. That's all. More on the inclusive development. At the same time, I sit on the board of a PanSouth, which is a PanSouth African Language Board, and on the issue of governance. The issue of governance are on the table, and I contribute my expertise on the fair basis. On the issues of Zulu language, I contribute. I approach the issues with a critical examination of the impact to the society. That's how I'm guided to contribute on the issues of them. At the same time, I would like to add, we have 20 years of democracy. We need to be vocal as disabled people of South Africa to say we want to see the benefits of reform, also the benefit of those minority community. If we don't say that, if we don't implement that, there will be no change at all. If I stand on the board, I will make sure the issues on disability, they reflect the issues of South Africa, the face of South Africa. Thank you.
Hey. Well, thank you very much. It's a mouthful. We actually followed the responses quite carefully. I must say I was lucky because I'm seated here, I could even hear you when you were responding. Not only depending on the interpretation. So thank you very much for affording us that opportunity for the responses. It's unfortunate I won't be able to respond now, whether you made it or not. We'll have to finalize the interviews, but surely it was very interesting to engage with you. But now I see one member raising a hand. I'm not very sure what hand. What is it for? Member can proceed. What did you want to say?
Okay. It doesn't feel like I'm audible. Oh. No, I just wanted to get the political background and if you have held any significant position in a political party.
No, I don't have any political background, but I'm an activist, I'm an advocate, because if I understand right, the politicians actually they come from the activist background. So I'm not a politician. I love community development. That's where my passion is. Honorable member, thank you.
Thank you. I don't want you to travel further than this. I am now thanking you for the interview, and I'm releasing you. Thank you very much for support. And good luck.
Thank you, Chef.
Honourable members, we are getting MAP before Uzo. Whom are you getting?
I'm so electronic. I always make sure that there's an alignment to the reigning government legislation and aspirations of a particular country, because that's important, not to try and work in silos. And for me to achieve that, it means I needed to sit down and read what is it that talks through, what is the vision of the government of Free State in terms of education, in terms of health, in Gauteng, Malawi, or any other part of the continent. I thank you.
Hey, thanks. Okay, are you fine? Thanks. Let's proceed to Honorable Davis.
Thank you, Chairperson. Welcome. Thank you for coming. Thank you. I've got two questions. The first one is, in which instances do you think that it's justifiable to limit press freedom? That's the first question. If ever, you might think that it's never justifiable, and that's okay too. Second question is, are you politically active? If so, which organizations do you have a position, which political organizations do you hold office in? Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Honorable Davis. It's correct. Thank you. Okay, on the question of press freedom, I move with Article 16 of the Bill of Rights. That sits very closely to my heart, freedom of expression, you know, freedom of speech, freedom of access to the media, which is absolutely the founding act, the founding article perhaps that informed the MDDA that we have today. All freedoms, all rights in this world comes with responsibilities. I think I would take that posture in responding to you to say, even if it's not press freedom, all forms of freedoms come with responsibilities. And I believe that no right or freedom, or in the quest of expressing a particular freedom or a right, has to be at the expense of the other citizen. So it's a heavily contested space in our country at the moment, the question of press freedom. And I often think we are lost even in translation to get to know what it actually means, because it's the question of knowing that whatever we do needs to be balanced and juxtaposed with the rights of others as well. Because no journalist sits and writes news for him or herself. That's a very important observation to make. No journalist says, or a general crew gets into a car, runs to do a story for him or for herself. It means those stories are done for consumers, and stories about people in most instances, until perhaps the day the dog, the man will eat the dog kind of story. But it's all about human beings who also have got rights. So it's a very, that's my approach or my view in that matter. The issue of political activity, I am not an office bearer of any political party at the moment, but I'm an active citizen with very strong political views, and exercise my right to vote every 5 years. And yes, thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Let's proceed, Honorable Zordinsky.
Good
Thank you.
You have alluded to the fact that MDK needs the capacity to fundraise. Who do we have in mind as a potential funder? And the SNG is about the transformation. Do you see the private sector playing a role to that effect?
Thank you, Honorable Speaker. The private sector has to play a role. The reason why the private sector is not helping in South Africa, I think it's because having sat on the other side of the table, receiving requests from NGOs, government, and so forth, departments, I think it's the question of the language. You know, it's important to know the language that is required, the language that is used in the National Assembly, to be able to be compliant or to be able to thrive in that space. Even in corporate, it's the same. Corporate is a different ballgame with its different efforts and orientation. And now, in South Africa, because of the vibrant economy that we have, we are home to many multinationals. Just walk outside, look at the buildings, as you see, it's multinational entities coming here because they are greener pastures. It is part, over and above, you know, corporate social responsibility contributions that are made. MDDA needs to come with strategies that would, you know, close to compelling those corporate entities to participate. There's a lot that I have in mind. Talking to the issues of ease of access of technology. When you go to Korea or you go to Hong Kong, the very same entities, be it Huawei, Samsung, all these companies, LG, which are all active in our country. When you go to the US, Microsoft, that's home for the Microsoft. They are MDDA there. These solutions, gadgets, you know, pushes issues of electronic literacy in their community, but it's not happening here. It's not happening here because our MDDA has not made them aware that, one, it's what we aspire to have, but secondly, it is their social responsibility in the true sense to make sure that some South Africa is a developmental thing, achieves the type of an objective. So there's a whole lot of companies that I have in mind. Mining companies, because they are sitting there with minerals and communities are just given, you know, whatever that they are often given. Part of the CSR that mining companies does for communities needs to be informed. Now the MDDA needs to be a force to be reckoned with, needs to be seen as a very strong influencer in the space. You know, we can't have a situation where, quite frankly, even when you ask, you know, when you talk to, you know, to the Twitter generation and mention MDDA, some of them they need to Google first to know what we are talking about. But they are using Twitter. That's an MDDA space because now that's the media first hand. Now the MDDA needs to restore, reclaim its space in the minds of our people. Now I can really name, I can actually, Honorable Sotheki, in responding to you, say the company that comes to your mind is the company that will help us push the MDDA agenda. Be it a cement manufacturing company, be it, you know, an ICT company, in PE, if the automobile manufacturing company, they will have to respond to the call, because even in the cars being manufactured today, increasingly there's a lot of IT sophistication in these cars. You know, where you find that in the older generation, if they cannot be a CD in the car, there's media. So I view media in the broadest sense of the word, because it will talk to what Honorable Lewis spoke about, the issue of electronic literacy. So forth. So now it's time that the MDDA wakes up, claims its rightful space, and goes to, you know, with the utmost humility, but with the courage of conviction, goes to corporate entities, multinationals and local, and say, now it's time to put something on the table so that we can realize the true developmental agenda of our country. If we don't have people who are confident using cell phones, who are confident, you know, using any piece of or tool of technology, it means we are drifting further and further apart. My last input, you go to Korea, grade zero class, I even have photos, they use tablets, grade zero, 6 year olds, they are taught using tablets. Us, you have your 6-year-old, you keep him as far as you can away from a tablet because you just see him or her spoiling it. Now, that's the responsibility of the MDPA, but we need funds to achieve that. And we have funds, we have a very fluid economy, we have companies in our stock exchange. That's the space we need to tap in. And with the mandate of the MDPA, talking the language that Corporate South Africa wants to hear, and making sure that we change the status quo. Thank you.
Okay. No, thank you very much for all the responses. Did I touch all members? I did.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. We have quite interesting things. We will do the final say after the interview of everyone else, but we thank you for taking us through in detail on your responses. Okay, and we wish you all the best. Good luck.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Thank you, honorable members.
Thanks. What do we call it? Do we call it evening? Good evening, Mr. Stanley. Am I calling it right? Okay. That's Mr. Mahmoud Abdullah Stanley. And welcome. Thanks for taking interest, nominated, and you're here for the interview. We thank you. I have a panel that will be doing the interview. Others are just coming in. At the moment, there is Honorable Teddy there, Honorable Zotezi, Honorable Davis, Honorable Ndlozi at the back, and it's Moloi Morupa myself. We will be taking you through this process. 45 minutes is allocated for us to interact with you. So you'd have to spend around your time so that all members can be able to actually pose the questions. If you can take maybe 30 minutes on one question, then other questions are gone. So it will allow you to also spend your own time in terms of all the questions so that we cover them all. The interview is meant for 3 posts. Among those posts, 2 of them are full-time. It's a full term. 1 is a filling up of a resigned post, so it's a particular term. So we will, after finishing, determine who gets the filling up, who gets the full term. So you shouldn't be surprised, at the end, once you can find us, they were not all the same, we're filling up somewhere, and we're taking also two posts. If it is, can you follow that?
My understanding is that this is the one vacancy in the
NDA. You press the mic there? Yes, or one vacancy. No, it's not one, it's three.
For three vacancies?
Yes, yes, which gives us the bigger space to do the appointment. But two is full term, there's one designation that should have, so we're filling up the designation as well. Three. Okay. Alright, so now, what we're going to do, we will start with the first question and numbers will follow. And the first question that one would like to pose to you, while Honorable Kekana has already came in, and that is Honorable Madisha, who will also be dealing with the panel. We just started, Honorable Members. I was about to pose a question to Mr. Mahmoud Abdullah Fengli. I would like you to introduce yourself in your own ways. While you do that introduction, just make sure that it also relates to your qualification, to your experience, and the expertise. Over to you.
Thank you, Honorable Moloi Merpo. I consider myself a media professional. I've been working in media for the past 17 years. Currently, I work basically as a journalist, because I write, and I write for my own newspaper, so I'm a publisher. And the work that I do spans also media work beyond the publication that I publish. I serve on the Press Council of South Africa, on the adjudication panel, and that involves adjudicating complaints against the press. So I am engaged constantly, in media organizations, particularly the printed media, that have to face either the public or other organizations and entities that complain against articles published in the particular newspapers. I have served on the Association of Independent Publishers Board for 8 years, five of which I was the chairperson. And the function of the association, the AIP, is to serve the interests of small independent community media. A lot of the focus of the work that we've done over the past 8 years was on transformation, was on advocacy, and was on capacity building of small independent press. Another part of it, which I have taken a very strong position, is to lead the organization in integration initiatives. And here I don't mean demographic or political integration. It's more in a technical sense. We need to diversify print and to converge it with other platforms, such as social media, broadcasting, particularly radio and television. And they're looking at community radio and community television. So that, broadly speaking, covers my professional interests as a media person. Academically, I've been a teacher, but I finished my degree at university. I did a PhD, which is a diploma, I had a diploma in education. I finished an honors degree in English. I went on to commence a master's degree in journalism. I completed a fellowship in journalism for 1 year in the United States. And I've done a number of other courses which supplement and complement the media space in journalism in particular. And I've got some interests and some experience in business as well. I've managed a plastic manufacturing plant as part of a family business in Atlanta. So that, broadly speaking, covers my professional interests as well as my personal interests to a large extent.
Thank you. Yeah, just on the Media Development Diversity Act, are there things that you'd like to just relate to us? Maybe also, if you want to, relate to the witnesses and the strengths.
I think the NDA Act is an important piece of legislation. It was introduced more than 10 years ago, and I think it is I think it's now time for the act to be reviewed, and the opportunity that has been granted to the public and to entities within the industry is actually a well-placed one and well-timed one. The act speaks to a very important sector of the South African population, both in terms of the population that receives news and information and that is subject to exposure and influence by people who have access to media. It speaks to, them and their needs. But the Act also speaks to those who own media, and more particularly to those who are marginalized in ownership of media. And I think that is why the role and function, the efficacy and execution of the key principles in the legislation is very, very important to look at. And I think the past 10 years has given us a very good opportunity to assess how much that Act has actually contributed to transformation and to development and to diversity. My personal view is there's a lot to be desired here. And having, as a worker at community media level, as an owner at community media level, as a board member of an association that represents press at community media level, I believe that the results that we've seen in terms of output from the NEDA have been minuscule in leading to the desired changes in transformation that we're actually looking for in this country. So to answer the question a little bit more specifically, what are the weaknesses? I think one of the weaknesses is that the Act does not make provision for a standard or a measure in which transformation can be actually measured, where we can have a target and a set standard for both government, but more particularly for the big players in media, the large owners, the corporations, national and multinational corporations in South Africa, to demonstrate what they have done to actually contribute to transformation. Very often they are focused on their own BEE scorecard, which I think plays a very important role. It has a function. There is a role for that. But none of those scores are specifically allocated for transformation at grassroots level, at community level. And I think that is one area in the Act that should be looked at. There's a range of others I think one can look at, but I will leave my comments in terms of the question at that.
Thank you very much. I will immediately request Honorable Marisha to post this question.
Okay, thanks, Chair. To me, I do understand the evolution of policies, government policies, insofar as this realm is concerned, it's that clear. But then the issue of management and skills is something that I want you to actually explain. But talking about NDD, the center and beyond, will be able to handle that, will be able to, if you are given that particular position, you know, to manage the structure at the center, or even ensure that the members beyond the center are able to do that which they are supposed to do. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Adisha. I think a more comprehensive answer to your question will depend on the actual job description for management or otherwise involved in the on the board. But I can tentatively and with some caution say yes, because management skills is part of my repertoire skills as a media professional within the organization that I work for and the work that I do outside of my newspaper. So I'd like to just say that it's important that when one considers the role and the function of the NDDA in particular, which is really mandated to bring about transformation, to look at ownership and capacity building, those are the key, some of the key priorities. And if one is to manage that process and look at actual programs that the MBDA has to execute in order to do that, I'm fairly comfortable that I am familiar with the required tasks.
Thank you. Let's proceed, Honorable Kekan.
Good evening, sir.
Good evening, Honorable Kekan.
Good evening. Just one question. Tell me, what can you do to ensure that media diversity is guided and nurtured?
Honorable Kekan, the safeguard of the diversity of media is actually guaranteed firstly in the Constitution, because the Constitution guarantees diversity of language, of culture, of religion. So at one level, that kind of guarantee or the foundation for it is already in place. But when it comes to media in particular, the MDDA Act, the MDDA Act actually goes a long way towards that as well. And I think what we need to do in order to further enhance the security of diverse groups, media groups within South Africa, is to ensure that we look at elements such as language. And I'm just taking that as an example. Indigenous languages in South Africa are actually a very, very important part of ensuring that the values of our democracy and our constitution are upheld. In order to manifest that through media, it's really important that we look at ways in which, and currently that is not the case, ways in which indigenous languages are represented in the priorities for projects that need to be sustained. We need to do a proper assessment of how many indigenous language groups represent community media at print, at radio, at television, and even at social media level. Prioritize among them those that need, require support, that warrant support. I think in that way, a more focused and targeted method can be arrived at securing diversity. That is just one example I've used, and I'm sure there are several others that can be applied in very much the same way.
Okay. Can I then proceed to Honorable Rosie?
The impact, okay, your critique of the status of community media at the moment and how, for instance, it might be affected by DTT, strengths and weaknesses. And then finally, media literacy and electronic literacy and how they relate to providing and promoting equal citizenship. And what practical thing do you think MDA could do to promote equal citizenship in light of media literacy and electronic literacy? So that's a question. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I'll try and focus on that as required, Honorable Rosie. One of the important weaknesses that I've always dealt with in my capacity as chairperson of AIP is adequate setting of standards and meeting those standards, particularly in the language, style, presentation, and the quality of journalism one encounters in community-owned newspapers. Some of them range from acceptable to appalling, if one takes the areas of concern into account. And I think that's one area of weakness I have prioritized in getting our members, the members of AIP, to be more focused in deserving funding from the MDDA, but also more focused on deserving admission to an entrance to industry awards such as the Sanlam MDDA Media Awards. I think that there's a great deal to be said for industry standards. I do believe that our members have to accept that whereas the Constitution can provide the framework in the enabling environment for media, community media to be supported, there is a very important onus on media owners themselves. The important onus on the publishers of community media of radio stations, of television stations, to maintain those standards that apply to their particular industry. Your second question, how media literacy can enhance equal citizenship. Fascinating question. Media literacy, I think, is important when it comes to an understanding of self and society. And one doesn't get it at school, specifically as a subject that is being taught, but one gets exposed to it in indirect way. And I think that the MDDA in particular, plus a number of other agencies that have a similar role, and I'm not talking about government agencies, I'm talking about private enterprise, as well as community organizations and NGOs, have an important role to play in enhancing media literacy. And the connection between that and equal citizenship is, I think, quite implicit. One cannot assume that democracy and an understanding of our rights and our obligations and understanding of the imperatives in a ideal society are understood equally by a person living in the center of Cape Town as opposed to a person living in Carcamas. There is a very, very important role for agencies like the MDDA to particularly reach out to rural dwellers, to those who do not have access to the physical resources that one assumes normally enhances media literacy. So that lack of equal citizenship, I think, gap that needs to be bridged is important for agencies like the MDA to bridge.
Okay, then proceed, thanks. Am I on the road now?
Yeah. It's Mahmoud. Mahmoud.
Mahmoud.
Okay. Mahmoud. Have you looked at your CV and the vast experience in the industry? That suggests to me I might only have to concentrate on the last part of my question with regard to electronic and print media, as to whether the two serve a different purpose in society or not. So I've decided to leave that apart. Having looked at your CV, do you think they serve a different purpose in society, print and electronic media?
On the possibility that three foundations, no, they don't. I think all media, broadly speaking, have common purpose, and that is to enhance society in the particular medium. But enhance it, in our case here, would be to serve the values of democracy and our constitution. And again, just to take another example, when it comes to religion and culture, for example, I'm not sure if I'm following you answering the question correctly. Please do guide me and interrupt me if I'm not. If one takes when it comes to culture in particular, and you're speaking to an example that that I'm familiar with in my own community, we have a community in which there's now a new movement for a cultural group to play cricket on an annual basis. And my newspaper was asked to cover this. I approached the organizers of the event and asked them, what exactly are you hoping to achieve by organizing this cricket event every year? So we want to expose our culture, the members of our culture, to cricket every year, and to both the youth and to keep them away from crime and so forth. But having looked at the mandate that they have, it is for the Kopni culture group. Now, Kopni comes from a district in India. And in India, the district of Kopend is where these people connect themselves to. So whoever came from India generations ago settled here in South Africa after 40, 50, 60 years. They find themselves, the children and the grandchildren, wanting to build that kind of social cohesion which binds them together. And they feel that cricket is the sport in which to do it. So my question to them as a media person was, why only Kuknis? Why is it not open to others? They said to me, oh, the constitution allows us to exercise our culture in this country, so there's nothing illegal about it. But my question remains, does your event, being exclusive to those members of the Kokni community, does it promote social cohesion? It might very well be legal. Is it ethical? And that is where the problem was. So in our newspaper, we didn't have the responsibility to report on it critically. And I think that is part of the mandate of a media organization that reports the facts as are, but you also have the responsibility to comment critically and in a healthy way that informs and enlightens people.
Thanks, Honorable Zedi. Can we then proceed to Honorable Davis?
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Mr. Sangler. I've got three questions that are quite quick and quite easy to dispatch with, I think. The first one is, in which instances do you think the press freedom should be limited, if ever? That's the first question. The second question is, the MDGA is quite clear about board members being impartial and not being involved in political organizations. Could you tell us whether you are involved in any political organizations? And then the third question is around your ownership of a community publication yourself. If you were appointed to the board, there could be a potential conflict of interest because obviously MDVA funds community media. How would you manage that conflict of interest if you were appointed? Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Davis. I'll deal with the first, or the last two first, because they're fairly easy to answer. As far as conflict of interest is concerned, I recuse myself from a board decision for funding for my particular media organisation should there be an application in that case. The first thing would be to make that disclosure, and the second thing would be to recuse myself. So there's complete and open transparency there. As far as political organization is concerned, I'm one of those journalists that believe a journalist should belong to a political organization to start off with, and shouldn't even openly support one. So if I do have my own party political convictions, those would be very personal and private. And I'm even sometimes very careful when I write my columns or any political comment that I write in a way that suggests party political affiliation. So that answers that question. The one, press freedom, are there ways in which press freedom should be limited? And the quick answer to that is yes. There is no such thing as an unlimited freedom. Freedom has limitations, and they are always counterpointed and balanced by responsibility. In the case of press freedom, we've dealt in the Press Council on many occasions where freedom of expression was often trumped by the right to dignity. There were at least two cases on which I've adjudicated where the panel has supported that human dignity can, in many instances, be regarded as the right that trumps the right of the individual or the collectivity, the trumps the right of the media organization for self-expression.
Thank you very much. Can I proceed to Honorable Zotip?
Good evening, Mr. Mahon.
Good evening, Honorable
Zotip. Honorable Davis, yes. As actually taking my reflection, or maybe we share the same sentiment in as far as the financial management is concerned and the conflict of interest. I think as a business person, you have the responsibility to ensure that your finances are sound, to nurture your resources, you know, generally. If it's going to be a budget, you're going to actually do two things to fundraise, to ensure that the resources, you know, are utilized prudently. To what point you're going to make a distinction where you fundraise for business and fundraise for MDDA for the benefit of the communities, especially the communities. How are we going to convince, you know, people out there that this cake of wedding now is MDDA, and at another time, this cake of wedding now is my general business.
Thank you, Honorable Tetsisi. Again, it's a fairly easy question to answer because in my business, which is a PTY Limited, I don't fundraise. We compete with other people in the marketplace for advertising revenue in our newspaper. So there isn't fundraising as such. On the contrary, with the NDDA, fundraising is a particular mandate in the Act. So we, whether it's from government or from the private sector or from foreign donor agencies or local donor agencies, the priority there is to present to them a compelling motivation and proposal that persuades them that the cause and the mandate of the NBDA is a worthy one, one worthy of support, of their support and their funding. And I think that I can do without any fear of conflict of interest with my own news organization.
Okay, that was the last question. And possibly our last question for the day as the past. Because, we are posted here and we'll proceed tomorrow. We want to thank you for that indulgence and trusting us at its date. We are, like you know, we are still proceeding. Have last candidates will then finalize after and do that appointment at the end. We really wish you all the best and we thank you for that engagement.
Thank you very much.
Looks like members are still, you know, edgy to go for it. I can still reopen it.
No. I'm happy to answer the question.
Okay, I'm also ready to take you to another session. Can you start? No, thank you very much. No, we had all of what you wanted to hear.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you too. All the best. Good luck.